Joe, how you doing?
Good evening, Tim. It's just an absolute pleasure to hear your voice.
Great. Great to talk to you. So tonight, we want to take on the issue of professional sports as mind control, brass and circuses. So professional sports. Tonight, you know, talk about, so we say, some of the more scandalous, the sort of the... talking about professional sports, the more questionable dimension to professional sports, the gambling, the corruption, the point shaving, its links to organized crime, the huge contracts and television, of course, the social engineering aspect of it, of pro sports is sort of a breads and circuses. So do you want to start off on your reflections on it, on the topic?
Sure, or? Well, of course. I mean, I think that sports are... professional sports, specifically, are in all ways destructive to our culture. People should avoid them whenever possible. Football is just a complete scandal at this point. It's damaging every single individual that participates on a professional level. You have to wonder, well, how did we get here in a culture where so much of our time is spent watching sports and reading about sports figures? I think that between pornography and sports watching, sports betting, they would use up a great fraction of young people, particularly young males, leisure time. And, they are designed, in my opinion, to function like the bread and circuses did in ancient Rome. I mean, these are just things that have been created for a number of very evil reasons. I'm going to get into that in a second, but they're just created basically to keep people from thinking about the fact they're being enslaved. This technological enslavement is descending upon them, and, you know, they're watching, a football game. I was reading today that they're going to start, rolling out this face recognition in airports. It's quite a breakthrough. And, this is all heading to a really bad place if the population doesn't, wake up to the fact that the technological slave camp is being established. And, in my mind, the two real distractions... there's three. I mean, there's music, obviously pornography is the most destructive, but the greatest distraction, the greatest time waster is sports. I don't know, what can we think about sports, Tim, that, helps people to understand, how do we get people to recognize that this is just something that they shouldn't be spending their time with?
Well, I like to start with a while back. I interviewed Brian Toohey. He's the author of "The Fix Is In," and also "A Season in the Abyss: Sports Gambling Versus the NFL's Integrity." And his website poses a question: are professional sports fixed? And he answers the question with a question: would you leave a multi-billion-dollar business up to chance? And that's what people should ask themselves. I do think if you expose the extent to which the sports games, tennis matches, Super Bowls, football games, soccer matches, even baseball or basketball games are fixed, or points are shaved, or they're massaged, or referees are designed to have rulings on the field that tweak the game in a certain way, you delegitimize sports and sort of undermine its integrity, and that goes a long way, maybe making people walk away from it and stop investing so much in the game itself, so much time and emotional energy. And I do think they're a huge distraction. That's what the oligarchs have always put these games on, and their oligarchs are doing it today. So exposing people just to the extent to which these games have always professional sports, particularly the NFL, but pretty much every professional sport has always been closely linked to organized crime and professional gambling, and that undermines the integrity of the game itself. And it's still a simple number. I think all the four major professional sports here in the United States gross about $25 billion a year. And it's estimated that gambling is about $80 to $400 billion a year. So when you have that much money involved in gambling on the sports, it's hard to believe that much weight wouldn't influence what goes on the field. If just sheer weight, $25 billion versus anywhere from $80 to $400 billion. Because it's a lot of it's illegal, so it's hard to estimate. But either way, it's you're dealing with anywhere from 3 to 4 times to. To 20 times what the revenue is over the table to the sport, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know, I won't mention his name, but he's a friend of mine, odds maker, famous guy, has one of the largest internet sports books out there. And I have sat with him many times in his den while he creates odds, and I can just assure you that everyone who plays the game against the professionals is losing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean everyone, they all lose. I never through him learned of any fixing of games.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really need to do that, because they can just take all the money that's out there just by creating basically odds that are guaranteed to lose for the population.
Yeah.
So that whenever you're involved in sports betting, it's ridiculous. It's like playing roulette or something. The people who create the book just know what they're doing, and yet billions of dollars are wasted.
Mm-hmm.
on this very thing. And so I think you're right that if people understood that, one, that the typical sports betting is not a game that can be won. It's impossible. No one wins it. I've seen the records of people over years and years of activity, and everyone who stays in it a long time, no matter how smart they are, how good they are at the beginning, loses everything. It's just an impossible game to beat. So that's one. But then, your point is that they're not really, whenever it's necessary, they can just fix the games.
Yeah,
it's just too easy to just basically tell someone to have an off night. And that's it. You don't have to get every member of the team. You just have to tell the quarterback to throw an interception or to throw it out of bounds or, someone who's the scorer on a basketball team just to miss a few. And then because you have, you're so often playing against a score, you've got the Denver Broncos +7.
Yeah,
the spread is just so easy to... So I hope that people, recognize that this is just a miserable addiction. You don't even get a buzz out of it like with heroin. You just go straight to the gutter. And that would be good that if that information came out and people, learned that this is one, a distraction, and two, it's a guaranteed loser.
Yeah, there is. I mean, as far as there's two ways the game is corrupted. One is, of course, the betting and the bribing of players or threatening players, coercing players to have a off night to beat the spread or to turn a win into a loss, and that is technically illegal. There's a law against that. The Sports Bribery Act that they passed in the 1960s. No one's ever been convicted on it, from what I understand. But we have this character, Frank Lefty Rosenthal. He was the inspiration for the character Rothstein in the movie Casino. And of course, in the movie Casino, he's a bookmaker who has excellent intelligence, knows if the football player has a pregnant girlfriend or has a bad knee or has a cold, which way the wind is blowing. And that's how it's described rather artfully in the movie. It's a very good movie. If you like mobster movies, you'll love the movie Casino. Martin Scorsese, you know. But the real Frank Lefty Rosenthal, according to Brian Toohey, I talked to him about him, and he did. He actively fixed games. He would train college basketball teams how to miss layups, so games were being choreographed. One time he gave one team food poison.
Yeah.
You know, and especially in college sports where, you know, they're amateurs, it's very easy to flash some cash and have them, you know, especially if they're not going to be professionals. Why wouldn't you do this if you're a player? Everyone's making money off your free labor anyway. So games are actively tweaked. But then there's the issue of games being tweaked within the league, which is not illegal. In fact, there was a court ruling a few years ago, a man who held season tickets to the New York Jets sued in federal court because of the this happened to do with the Patriots, one of the Patriots violations, videotaping practice or something, and he was being denied a fair game. Well, the effect of the court ruling was that when you buy a ticket to an NFL game, for any sports match for that matter, you're paying for entertainment and not a fair competition. There's no guarantee that the NFL has to put forth fair competition. You're there to entertain you. So legally speaking, the NFL is no different than roller derby or professional wrestling.
Of course. Yeah. And I mean, you know, just taking a step back, this should be something that is self-evident to everyone who attends. I mean, you know, professional sports are completely artificial. They're completely fake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have like, you know, the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, there's not a 49er out there. They're not 49ers. And none of them are basically representing the town in any real way. They don't have any attachment. They just trade players back and forth like casino chips.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you're supposed to have some kind of, you know, alliance with the uniform, you know, and your team winning. And they're able to keep the tension real by, you know, just constantly reinforcing it. These, you know, with video, with just round-the-clock promotion of the thing. But, you know, it's a fake game.
Yeah.
The whole thing is fake. It's just not a real game. These aren't really your city fighting against some other city. This is an artificial construction that they've created. And the purpose is evil. It's to distract you from thinking about, you know, who runs the country.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to go sideways for a little bit and just point out that if you look at baseball, which, you know, sort of the first giant distractor. Well, that comes from Abner Doubleday. You know, he was one of the founders of the Theosophical Society. You know, he's a secret society member, a Mason. I mean, he just couldn't be more corrupt. And then worse than that, if you look at football, you've got Walter Camp and what's his name? Amos Stagg. These are the founders of it. Now, people should really spend some time looking at these two guys because, you know, they created a game which basically is training for warfare and for obedience. And if you look at the timing, it's sort of leading up to World War I, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're supposed to, you know, put on the uniform and march into the field, right, and do battle. So football has often been regarded as training for warfare. Now, Walter Camp and Amos Stagg, they both come from Yale. They're the two who actually set up both the rules, which including like the tackle, right, which is so violent. And they are the ones who created the NFL, basically. There are different people involved in it, but they... The two truthers are Camp and Stagg. They both did the rules of the game, and then they set up the first professional teams. Now, they have an amazing connection to one another. They're both Skull and Bones members. I mean, this is just beyond belief.
Yeah.
Now, Why is Skull and Bones wanting to have people to learn obedience to go on to a field and do fist fights when instructed? Well, I think basically the guys, they're getting us ready to be so in the trenches, you know. I mean, this is what it's about. Now, I'll mention that the way you can absolutely be certain about this is that when Camp got done designing the NFL, he went to work for the United States military during World War, just before World War One, and then during World War One, and he devised a training program to get the servicemen to be able to be more physically fit. It was like the, it was like really the very first kind of shorthand training regimen. You have like Jane Fonda's workouts and all this stuff.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Camp invented this. It was a training regimen that he invented, which then both the Army and Navy adopted. All right. So this is really, you know, a red flag here, right? That you have both the game of football and the violent rules. And then you have the same guy setting up the training and preparation for the trench warfare, right? And then you go in immediately into secret societies. And I don't want to be long-winded, but I'm just going to say that, okay, so Camp is one of the most evil people I can imagine. So not only does he set up this violent game, creating all of this head concussion, training people to follow orders and, you know, and march into battles that are artificial, right? Because basically the football violence is as artificial as the World War One violence. But you look at him, you look at his background, and he marries William Sumner's sister. Hmm. Now Sumner was the guy who invented, he was another, of all things, Skull and Bones guy. Right. So Camp marries his sister. He invents sociology. Oh, my gosh. Right. He invents sociology. He created the term ethnocentrism. Remember the American Jewish Committee studying this later on? Okay. He invents the term. He said that, you know, like people really didn't have any rights. And this is his quote here doesn't get understood, because I really do think that this is kind of the inspiration for the NFL. Sumner says, you know, he didn't like people having any rights. He liked government. He liked world government. And he said, you know, he says, before the tribunal of nature, a man has no more right to life than a rattlesnake. He has no more right to liberty than any wild beast. His right to pursuit of happiness is nothing but a license to maintain the struggle for existence. So this is your Skull and Bones football. It's social Darwinism with a uniform on, you know. Mm-hmm. And so this I'm afraid to say is really the basis of our professional sports. You know, it creates an artificial conflict that helps with mind control.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Tim, think of the relationships to this day between the military and football.
Yeah, that's, I think, $100 million dollars a year the NFL gets from the Department of Defense, yeah.
Yeah.
To run those ads, you know, because they're the people watching the games, a lot of them are just young, ignorant, you know, stupid young men who, you know, who think that that's how you, that's the sign of masculinity, to go off and be fodder for the empire. And, you know, and every game, you know, accompanies a flyover with military colors and these things. And the flags barely fit into the stadium anymore.
Yeah, they cover the stadium.
Yeah.
And they're just recruiting for the military, basically. Mm-hmm. I just look at, like, the militarism on display is just almost, you know, mind-numbing recruitment to get basically young males to think that it's a great idea to go and serve the oligarchs in, you know, the Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, are you really serving your country by firing drones or missiles at Syria or guarding a poppy field in Afghanistan? walking the line.
Well, and you know, the war is no more real, I mean, than the football game. And so that's why, you know, what if we really want to get to the bottom of, like, the nature of professional sports, we've got to get into the, you know, the control of culture by the secret societies, because they set up this whole athletic professionalism with their media, right? Think about it. Their media. I mean, if you look at, like, New York Times, right? Who owns it during this period? It's owned by August Belmont and a guy named Jerome. August Belmont is the
Rothschild agent. Yeah,
he's the Rothschild financial agent for the United States, and Jerome is the father of Winston Churchill's mother. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, these guys own the New York Times, which then promotes a sports page that covers football games, the college, and these the fledgling professionalism. Well, guys, this is all just a sick plan. They're just taking us into bread, not just taking us into bread and circus, but they're also recruiting gladiators at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And infantilizing the public, because sports used to be something that children were concerned with.
Yeah.
And you it was a time when people understood that at childhood's end, you put away childish things and took up, you know, responsibility. These things were designed, again, like you said, designed to, you know, to distract and beguile people. The spectacle of it all, you know.
Yeah, well, look at the, like, soccer game hooligans, you know. These are, like, males up to, like, 40 years of age. They've never grown up. They bond around these artificial conflicts for sports teams which are purportedly representing their city but are owned by oligarchs that wouldn't even bother to slow down, you know, if they were in the road in front of their moving cars. You know, I mean, they can't stand the hoi polloi.
Mm-hmm.
And so yet this is, you know, so then everyone comes out, gets drunk, has these, you know, and then they have violent conflicts against other peasants from other cities because their sports team lost. I mean, it's just pitiful. It's like you know the debasement has just gotten to a point where the oligarch has been able to push culture to a subhuman place.
And also, you mentioned these cities. It's become routine now for taxpayers to build stadiums for these billionaires. I think the NFL in the past 15 years has received since 20 years. Has received $6.7 billion from the public to build stadiums, 19 new stadiums. And that's just become routine now. Again, it's for these games. You know, history of sports with fixed games. Of course, everyone knows about the Black Sox scandal and Rothstein, you know, bribing.
Yeah.
Although the players were acquitted in court, the league suspended them for life and supposedly reformed the league and all that. But Major League Baseball itself got its start because of gambling interest. That was its market. That's what got people watching the games, was the gambling. Got people interested. Same thing with the NFL. NFL has long ties to organized crime. Some of the most prominent teams, like the Pittsburgh Steelers or Rooney's, or I think DiLombardo, the Giants, all own racetracks and casinos.
Yeah,
it's all gambling. I mean, it all goes back to gambling. And of course, what gambling does is it keeps that many more eyeballs on the game. So they love gambling. But there's more interest within the game itself. Is the game, the league itself, will tweak games for various reasons, to create a certain narrative, drama, to support, to highlight a certain player, a marquee player. It was pointed out to me that a few years ago, when Aaron Rodgers was being sort of promoted as a marquee player for the Packers, their season that they went to the playoffs, they were 15-1. Everyone knows in the NFL that every play you could call holding on an offensive line, and it's just up to the referees whether they want to do it or not. Well, that year when Aaron Rodgers was being promoted as a great football player, 11 straight games his offensive line was not called for holding, which is impossible. Obviously, they're tweaking and massaging the game to promote this individual player. But more importantly, we're picking on the NFL right now because it's such a big sport now. and how it became the premier sport in the country. But if you look at Super Bowl III and IV, were key because between 1966 and 1970, the AFL-NFL merger was going on. And the AFL was the upstart league. The NFL was the senior circuit, the dominant league, the better, considered to be much, you know, superior league. But they had to organize this merger, and people were skeptical of the merger, particularly the fans, because they didn't see the AFL as top-notch. Lo and behold, you had these two Super Bowls, three and four, where the Jets beat the Baltimore Colts and the Chiefs, AFL, beat the Minnesota Vikings. And it's now many players have come out and said that they were told to back off. It was fixed. That they needed those AFL victories to seal the legitimized the merger, which was huge back then. It was a huge deal. And that's an example of how some of these games, like, you know, Joe Namath's, you know, famous prediction that he would win. This is like, this is big. I mean, that's like, now you tell people that the game was fixed, then they don't want to believe it because they have attached so much emotional capital in that upset victory. The idea of the upset victory, it was told to me that Cassius Clay, you know, a.k.a. Muhammad Ali, when he defeated Sonny Liston to win the heavyweight championship, that was fixed. Sonny Liston took a dive, and there's an iconic photo of Ali standing over Sonny Liston, gesturing with his arm. And what he's saying is, get up, I didn't hit you. And it turns out that Sonny Liston had a big stake in Cassius Clay's next fight. You see.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, Sonny Liston was no fool. The big money in the ring, the big money in boxing is made outside the ring.
Yeah.
You know, so he took a dive and had cashed in on Cassius Clay, then later Muhammad Ali's career. But people don't want to believe that because they were invested so much in the character of Muhammad Ali or Joe Namath or these sports figures. Yeah.
Well, and they don't want to believe that World War I was fixed or World War II was fixed. It's because they have emotional connections to one side or the other, and it would basically shatter the normalcy bias that humans have to think of the idea that, you know, the sporting events that involve so much emotion, right, for these individuals are not real. You know, it's the same thing when, you know, I suggest to people that they look into, you know, like secret societies creating World War I just to reduce European population.
Yep.
And they blink at me like, well, this is the most crazy, insane idea I've ever heard. And then you say, well, why was the war fought then? What do you think what was in back of, you know, 30 million people dying?
Mm-hmm.
They can't even now, they have no idea. But the idea that it was to benefit someone who isn't disclosing what the benefit that they are seeking is, it would never occur to them. But this is something that should be automatic. It should be automatic about World War I. It should be automatic about Super Bowl III, you know?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So just like you say, that there's just too much money at stake here. I mean, you're talking about billions and billions of dollars. They can't have the merger collapse.
Yeah.
Right? They can't have, you know, the attendance at the teams who are AFL suddenly go to zero, because that would just shatter the whole process. So they have to create the legitimacy. Mm-hmm. So you knew that Kansas City and the Jets were going to win those two, in my opinion. I mean, it just was – it's clear as a bell in hindsight. And the fact that a few heroes have come out now to say, well, you know, actually we were told that – well, of course, you know.
Yeah, and the coaches – I mean, obviously the head coach at the Colts was went on to win two Super Bowls with the Miami Dolphins. So everyone prospered. But again, it's a game, and it's being choreographed like a ballet. And it can again, games – everyone knows when they watch a team – like the Steelers, they get favorable calls because the franchise is worth more to the league than, say, the Cincinnati Bengals. And the same thing with the Patriots. Do you think it's just a coincidence that the Patriots won the Super Bowl right after 9/11? The Patriots. Yeah. Or the New Orleans Saints winning their Super Bowl right after Katrina? Or the Boston Red Sox winning the World Series right after the Boston bombing? I mean, it's a little...
It does seem a little hard to swallow, doesn't it? I mean, the best thing a sporting team can have is a terrorist event.
Yeah. And of course,
guarantees a world championship.
And where does the supposed victim of the Boston bombing show up 3 weeks after he loses both his legs? At a hockey match.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, there's nothing better than these survivors, you know, with no limbs coming out to try to make us more patriotic and support the Middle East wars more fervently.
The same children at the Super Bowl, they solidify these narratives. That's one function. You know, some of these, just shall we say, questionable, dubious events, but the NFL will solidify the official narrative by, you know, dragging these kids out to, you know,
yeah, just, it's, you all know, part of the way of creating a sense of reality. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, basically what we're dealing with is enchantment. It's enchantment. This is what we have basically been hit with as a culture. A group that is organized has, for a particular reason, enchanted us. There's various parts of it. You have patriotism, you have the terrorist events, but sports are a huge component of it. And I'm really happy when, you know, I was delighted when you sent me that email saying we should talk about this, because, you know, it isn't something that gets enough publicity. I mean, there's just all kinds of, you know, people that talk about 9/11 as a false flag. But the idea that the Super Bowl is a false flag doesn't want much, but it is. I mean, it that's literally what it is. It's an event that has violence, that has emotional connection, that is supposed to do something malevolent to the vast consciousness of the population. Mm-hmm. They're all just false flags, and of course, it's kind of almost absurd even to need to bring it up, because, like I was saying, you know, it's like the professional athletes that we root for aren't even members of our community, for God's sakes, you know.
Yeah, you ask, you know, you hear sports radio, let's say, well, we have to do this, we have to do that. I was talking to Brian Toohey about that, and he asked the question, why do people care so much about professional sports? No matter how many jerseys you buy, how many caps you wear, how many games you watch, you're not a member of the team. You didn't win anything. But still, right. People use that language. We. That's the same thing in war. We win. You know, we invaded. You know, we liberated France. You know, we won World War II. Well, we win the sports. We went to the moon. Right.
We got wiped out by the hundreds of thousands and tens of millions. We didn't win anything in World War I, World War II. Mm-hmm. We were wiped out. That's what we were. The oligarchs won. They had a tremendous victory because they could reduce the population they wanted to reduce. Yeah.
Another iconic event is, of course, we had this recent dust-up between John McEnroe and Venus Williams, and it immediately was compared to Bobby Riggs and Billie Jean King, probably because also the age difference of the two people. Again, Bobby Riggs, 1973, challenged Billie Jean King. He said that any man can beat any woman, which is an absurd statement. But nevertheless, they had this tennis match where she defeated him in straight sets, thus proving women were equal to men, I guess. I don't know, a 26-year-old I think she was rated number two women's tennis, defeated a 55-year-old man.
With dyed hair. You know,
it turns out, though, on his deathbed, they're talking about, turns out the game was probably fixed. The match was fixed.
Well, surprise? Yeah, of course it was fixed. I mean, the thing is that it was part of the promotion of the aggressive anti-male feminism.
Exactly.
The Gloria Steinem, right? So, mm-hmm. So there's a really good example. I'm glad you brought this up, because that just shows how sports are used as cultural poison. The reason that Billie Jean King was selected was not her stature, because she was actually on the decline. There was a lot of players who were better. Mm-hmm. Well, not a lot, but there were a few players who were better. It's because she was a lesbian. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew she was a lesbian. That was the whole reason that she was selected. It's because it was just a way of bringing about the normalization of the GBTL culture. You know, and I'm not trying to hate on gay people, Tim. I'm just pointing out that these gender issues can be used as weapons.
Yes.
And it's just like integration. You know, you there's all kinds of integration that can be beneficial when it, particularly when it's something that comes as a part of free expression and free will on the part of the different groups. Mm-hmm. But it can also be used as a weapon. You have to be on the alert for when it's being used for cultural destruction. And so that's why Billie Jean King, you know, because she was the most famous lesbian in the world at that time, and so they were just, you know, trying to pump her up to give her a platform, which is still in existence. I mean, they wheel out the old croaker at every single, grand slam. And yes. Then she'll make a comment, you know, and it's just, she's, so, you know, I mean, that was, if you think about the Billie Jean King thing, this was feminism using sports for cultural destruction.
Even her name, Billie, right?
Yeah, Billie King.
Yep.
So, William the Conqueror.
Yeah. That's the beginning of the sort of culture degradation. Of course, we see that now. Of course, you mentioned Super Bowl. Super Bowl now has these halftime shows, which are satanic rituals. So the entire nation partakes in a satanic ritual as entertainment.
Exactly. I mean, it's just so incredible. You see Madonna with a Baphomet,
yes.
Crown on, being dragged out by a whole slew of Roman soldiers who are in chains, basically. It's just a way of representing European slavery and the occult deity that is like, you know, something that we don't understand, that the oligarchs understand, you know, the Baphomet symbolism. And then, like you say, you've got just one satanic, I think Lady Gaga actually did a halftime show, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and it was fakery involved.
The thing is, I mean,
she didn't really dive. The people in the stadium saw a fake vision, which is really, really, really disorienting and chilling, if you ask me. Where that type of simulacrum or fake reality can be produced that way.
Yeah, I mean, next halftime show, I'm betting it'll be Maria Abramovich with a spirit cooking dinner for the entire audience.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so the halftime shows are. Basically, the oligarchs are showing off the secret society religions, which, of course, we're too stupid to understand, and it's just a way of humiliating us. And of course, the game itself is this, you know, violent and absurd contest that everyone is supposed to care about which team knocks out and destroys the brain cells, you know, more effectively than the other players. I mean, literally... if you want to see the future of the NFL, it'll be like they'll have trench warfare in a pit, and then at halftime, you know, Lucifer will come down from the sky and like have a cannibal feast. I mean, it just can't get any more depraved than it is now. It's just really disgusting, and this people should just turn the damn thing off.
And also, what you have to this sort of degradation is we've seen it where this is the NBA, the NCAA, and the NFL have gotten involved in some of these cultural political issues like gay marriage and the transgender issues. One thing they can do, well, one thing is I believe the NFL put pressure on the state of Georgia when they passed the Defense of Marriage Act, and they threatened to pull the Super Bowl out of it because of that. Now, why do they care? I mean, it's like, first of all, the constituency, I have to think, it was probably against gay marriage. But anyway, why are they even involving themselves in that issue? Same with the NCAA, with North Carolina, the NBA, I think it was North Carolina, when the state was passing that law of revoking the local ordinance requiring businesses to accommodate transvestites or transgendered individuals in public bathrooms. Why are they even getting involved? And it seems to me, at the very least, it's a legitimate issue. For the state the state government to address, as opposed to some outside corporation. This shows how these New World Order corporations go in and put pressure on local governments to bend their will. You know.
Yeah.
Why are they promoting that? Why are they promoting these issues? And now my brother was watching a game. It was a basketball game, and they have the, you know, it seems very benign where they have the, you know, in a normal situation, which they have this. There's a break in the game. The fans will be urged to kiss their loved ones beside them, and usually you have a man kissing a woman, his girlfriend or wife or fiance, but no, they have to show the gay couples doing it.
Yeah,
and you got to watch that. So you can't watch that with your kid.
Yeah. I mean, it's just they're doing everything they can to normalize, an atomized sexuality where heterosexual activity is just one of the palette, you know, that you can select from, and it basically it's just a birth control approach where they're just trying to, on one hand, promote what can be called in terms of nature perversion, right, mm-hmm. rather than real sex. And then at the other side, you know, you're eating their glyphosate hot dogs.
Yes.
At the game. So you're losing, you know, what little like natural energy your body has anyway. So the whole thing is just a sick, swirling cesspool of evil, you know, kind of neurolinguistic programming, toxicity, and learned violence. I mean, it's just the culture is, you know, people think of it as sick. It really isn't. It's just injured. Mm-hmm. Our culture has been injured. That is the problem. It isn't a sickness. It isn't decadence. It is an injury. People who are very sophisticated, people like this Sumner character who is the brother-in-law of the founder of the NFL, who creates ethnocentrism and sociology, he, and of course, you know, sees absolutely no rights whatsoever for the individual, right? People like that have set up the sports culture that we have. And the population is not aware that it's something that is designed to damage them. This is the key. This is the key, Tim, is that they don't get it. Kids grow up watching television. The TV promotes, you know, the games. I mean, now with the iPhone, you can watch football around the clock, 24/7.
Yeah, they have what? Sunday football, Sunday night football, Monday night football, Thursday night football.
And so you watch this, and basically every time you do, your mind gets a little bit weaker. You're succumbing to a mindless world of violence, an artificial world. I mean, the contest that you're engaged in is not real. It is not real. These are not real people who are fighting a real war. These are basically lifetime actors. They're hired to be in there, you know, and to create an artificial pageant. And yet there you are, you know, as the fan, it is real. You see, the competition is real. I have to pay attention to it. It draws in your emotion. And then you end up spending so much time with the thing. And of course, what you should be doing, what people should be doing, is learning how to think and learning how to build community, you know, with their family and with their extended family and with their ethnicity. I mean, Tim, the thing that I most hate about the American sports culture is that it separates families. There's so little family time that's available. You know, you've got the two parents working, and then where is the time for them to be able to spend with the children? And on Sunday, you know, the male goes into like a coma where he just watches violence for 6 hours. This is time when he should be spending trying to develop a relationship with his child and trying to develop their rational powers, you know?
Yeah, I've noticed that just in my own living memory, what the Super Bowl became. I'm picking on the NFL, in my childhood, the Super Bowl was just one big game, and it was on in the afternoon, and it was over. Then it became a spectacle. This past Super Bowl, there were the days leading up to it. The news station was giving a weather forecast for Super Bowl Sunday, not where the game was being played, but because it's assumed everyone goes to your plant. It's almost like a holiday weekend.
You know, yeah,
you're, the right. party. Everyone assumes you're going to a Super Bowl party. And I know I get together with family. We watch the game, and I marvel at just the absurdity of it all. But it becomes an excuse to get together and drink and talk, which I guess if it's the background, it's okay. I guess it's like Thanksgiving.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. It's just it should be instead of the watching Mick Jagger sing "Sympathy for the Devil." What they should be doing is sitting around and discussing how they can, through organization, become more financially successful, culturally successful. How about the men sitting around going, you know, how can we have a little bit more political power? Why don't we try to get interested in that game, you know, rather than the Detroit Lions and the Denver Yahoos?
Yeah.
And Mick Jagger singing, you know, "Sympathy for the Devil" at halftime. How about the men just sitting around going, you know, gosh darn it, we don't have any political power at all. We don't have any. We're as impotent as slaves, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting watching, you know, Hillary Clinton debate Donald Trump. Well, where is our candidate? Where is our team? Where are our 49ers? Where are our Rams, right? The oligarchs own these creatures on the football field. We need to develop our own athletic heroes, you know, that are political heroes, that are financial heroes. Right? Yeah,
if you're interested in the NFL, look up the NFL history and the Clinton Murchison and his connection to the Kennedy assassination and organized crime. That might be good. That might make NFL history interesting.
Well, this is what you got to do. You got to break it apart piece by piece so the public can see that this is just a mesmerizing device. And then they can wake up to the fact that there's all these elements of control of them, right, that they have to recognize, release the control from their minds, and then go on to some real citizenry.
Yeah, then they pay for the stadium. Then they end up paying ticket prices that are 4 or 5 times what they're paying in the old stadium. But they're told this is great because they got their shiny new stadium.
And otherwise, the team will go to some other city.
And you know, I like this. Las Vegas has a football team now.
Yeah. I mean, they should call like the Las Vegas holograms.
Yeah.
You know, because every player on the field is fake. It's just complete. The whole thing is just absurd. It's completely fake. People think of it as real.
Yeah, I think even the scandals, like Tom Brady's deflated balls, all that stuff, I thought was probably just created to get interest. I mean, they're talking. What are you going to talk about in the 2 weeks before the Super Bowl? You talk about scandal, get everyone interested in it.
Right.
And just like how in Hollywood, they'll arrange marriages and arrange scandals to get interest. To get the press, and the press will just promote it because the press makes money off the promotion of it, off the scandal. Same thing with the NFL. I mean, you know, whether it's their lavish lifestyle and these things and their huge contracts, and everyone knows the drafts are fake. There's a famous one with, I think it was Ewing back in the 80s when he was being drafted, and lo and behold, he went to New York, the capital of the NBA.
Tim, you're breaking up, buddy. I lost you.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you now. I'm sorry, but I lost you for a second.
Oh, talking about Ewing, the draft in 1984, 85, I think it was. Was it
80? Yeah.
Where, you know, is it going to be the San Diego Spurs, Sacramento, was it Spurs? I forget. Or the New York Knicks, where he goes to New York.
Right.
Lo and behold. And it turns out that when the commissioner was pulling it, they pull a card out of a, it's like a lottery type.
Yeah,
thing.
It's supposed to be, lottery, but they wanted random. Ewing
it was,
New York.
It was publicity. Obviously, there's a big dog ear on it. So,
Well, it's a pageant. It's unreal. They've been very successful at getting people to pay attention to it. It's one of the real destructive elements of our controlled mind.
There's
in this slave state.
Howard Cosell, late Howard Cosell, has his book he wrote, I Never Played the Game, in the introduction to it. After he wrote this book, he was kind of brushed aside. But he says in this book, he goes, I am writing this book now because I am convinced that sports are out of whack in American society, that the emphasis placed on sports distorts the real values of life and often produces mass behavior patterns that are downright frightening, and that the frequently touted uplifting benefits of sports have become a murky blur in the morass of hypocrisy and contradiction that I call the sports syndrome. I did not always feel this way. In the beginning, like most people in America, I had romantic ideas about sports. I found beauty in the contest, and I really believed that the public needed the circus that spectator sports provided in the daily travail of life. But the past 15 years have developed vast changes in my thinking and have caused me to reach the conclusion set forth at the top of this prologue. So that's what Howard Cosell said that about sports. So,
yeah, well, I mean, you know, he should have given all the money he made, you know, as an announcer back. But the fact is that the first crime that occurs particularly in football is the damage to the individuals who are playing. I mean, the NFL should be shut down tomorrow. Junior Seau was a linebacker for San Diego Chargers. Mm-hmm. He suffered, you know, brain damage from the many concussions. They went out and tested a bunch of other football players who'd had similar careers because Junior had, I think he'd killed someone or committed suicide. He had some kind of violent end. I forget, but. And so the family was going to bring suit, and they, because they found out in the autopsy that his brain was Swiss cheese. And so they did a study of other players to see, well, is this like a syndrome? They could use that in the suit. And basically everybody that they tested was, you know, these guys in their 40s were just, their brains were Swiss cheese. I mean, these concussions just, well, it kills you. Right. Slowly, of course, but it just if you're watching a snuff film when you watch these things. So, you know, the concussions, you know, they're just part and parcel with the way the Skull and Bone guys set up the rules. And so we like it as, you know, as like a Roman spectators of gladiator combat like violence. But this isn't a healthy thing. The people who talk about that this being is kind of healthy, cathartic, are in fact, this is like, you know, kind of sublimating, you know, what would have been warfare. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the most stupid arguments imaginable. I mean, this prepares you for warfare. This doesn't make you less likely. This is why they chose Walter Camp to design the training programs for the doughboys that went overseas that marched from there right into the automatic weapon fire, right? Mm-hmm. So the whole thing is preposterous. It's just a piece of sophistry to fool people from what is obviously something that's just set up for mind control. And this is the thing, Tim, is that, you know, yeah, it's corrupt in terms of the fairness of the contest. I think this is your point there is absolutely correct. It's corrupt, you know, professional sports are corrupt in the sense that they waste time, they're distractions. But what's really the worst part of in my opinion, is that they're designed to really damage the person who watches them. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really what is the worst part of them, is that they just take away the time that is needed for family. They take away the you know, a sense of reality, because believe me, it's just, you know, the games are fake, right? When you participate in a fake world, then you're less likely to have impact in the real world. So there's just nothing about them that's good. And it's really, you know, I kind of am sad, because it's kind of you'll hear guys in the alt media that will, you know, they'll be talking about mind control and MK Ultra, and they'll go, yeah, like, but then they'll flip into this, you know, they talk about the sports teams that they like we're just regular guys. I love the 49ers, you know, Henry here likes the Rams, and there's a Super Bowl. Now they'll have a little vignette and they just talk about it. It's so sad, because they should see that they're one and the same, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. MK Ultra, all of the mind control, the propaganda, the patriotism, the gigantic flags, You know, that, I mean, this is all just ways to be controlled.
And look how sports, this isn't professional sports, but it really is as big money, is how college sports has corrupted education all the way down to junior high school, because everyone's looking for a scholarship. Everyone's looking for a star player. High school coaches want to be college coaches, so they're recruiting kids to go to their schools. It used to be the high school team represented the student body. That's the team you fielded. Now, from my family, just through my nephews, I understand that high school coaches actively go to junior high schools to recruit kids and offer them scholarships, pay the parents money if the kid is good enough. So, and also they're exempt from the normal academic standards or rules, or even just rules of conduct in the school itself. So they recruit these players, more or less, you know, they're ringers. So from the very get-go, the child learns that if I have any physical prowess or talent, rules don't apply to him anymore. So they're corrupted from the get-go. So when you ask the question, can a professional athlete be corrupted, they're corrupted from the time they're 13 or 14, the first time they show ability.
Because the whole system corrupts.
Yeah. I mean, when I played Little League, there was always a couple of wealthy donors to the league that would feel a team as their vanity project, and the rules wouldn't apply to that team. They get all the best players. Same thing with Babe Ruth and all these things. So the rules don't apply to them either, because this, you know. So you learn at the very beginning, you learn the rules don't apply. Of course, let's not talk about the NCAA and all the rules that are broken, and you know, the boosters that pay these players fake jobs. Yeah. You know, they'll employ them in the summertime.
I think in general, we can agree that sports has been part of the cesspool, a really deep part of the cesspool of the American university system. It's just been catastrophic for the universities. You know, alcohol and drug use are part of the whole celebration.
They cover rapes up and things like that.
I mean, I won't want to mention the school's name, but my kids went to colleges, and during the time leading up to certain sport events, I mean, they just basically, the kids are just, provided with every alcohol and drug imaginable. You know, it just creates the hysteria that they're trying. The whole university is focused on these events.
Yeah, why would you care about, like the Crimson Tide?
Yeah, why exactly.
Why care about Notre Dame football?
Right. Aren't you there for some other purpose? I mean, they have really corrupted. And the other thing I want to mention is that I think it's been catastrophic for African Americans, because they've been promoted as athletes and are given avenues to participate in college sports when the athlete does not have the prerequisite skill set for universities, mm-hmm. right? Intellectual skill sets, scholastic skill sets. And so it's just created this kind of, you know, this is often something that's brought up about, well, you know, the kids don't graduate. Well, even if they graduate, so what?
Yeah.
It's just a degree in phys ed or something. It's just as artificial. And it just, because it creates an artificial success, right, in an artificial world, it's able to distract one component of American culture, in this case, the African-American community, from recognizing just how screwed they are by the present culture, mm-hmm. right? Because you get to see a lot of these individuals. I mean, just think of like how famous Michael Jordan is, right? All of these individuals and the entertainment individuals, they are what's held up to them as role models. It's just like you were talking before another show. You're talking about how like the music icons need to be sequestered because they're debauched, and they take the people who are influenced by them into a destructive area, right? And you can't have a real culture with these people as role models. It's the same thing is true in the African American community with the athletes and the entertainment people. These individuals should all be sequestered. African American kids growing up shouldn't know who Michael Jordan is.
Yeah, they shouldn't admire him. Why?
They should not admire him, right?
Because he can shoot, play basketball. He has good eye-hand coordination.
Those skills that are going to be available for you to be successful in the world with, he has no skills that you are going to be able to turn your culture around with.
Well, look at Wilt Chamberlain. Remember his book about conquering so many women?
I know. It's sickening, yeah. You know?
And again, the turn that around is that figures like that get these pliant or gullible consumers to fork out, you know, hundreds of dollars for tennis shoes.
Yeah, and I know. Which, of course, the athlete gets a tiny fraction, and then some oligarch harvests, you know, what little financial resources these kids have for like a $200, you know, tennis shoe.
And they're manufactured in some like destabilized third world country.
Yeah. You know. Well, yeah, exactly. So it's just a tip to stern cesspool. And basically, you know, when we turn off the media, turn off the music, turn off the movies, and turn off the sports.
Mm-hmm.
What's just that, shut it off. Your kids don't need to know any of this stuff.
Tune off.
tune off. Yeah.
How would you rephrase that? Off
and drop out.
There we go.
We have to come up with a slogan. Well, Tim, gosh, we could go on here for a long time. This is an important subject. This evening I've got to run. This will be the last time I ever have to break a conversation off. I told you before we started that I have an unfortunate engagement. But anyway, thank you so much. And I'm just, you know, I'm really happy we had the chance to talk about this, because I just feel like, you know, it's something that people in the alternative media seemingly aren't aware of, but it's a real problem.
Oh, yeah. And I myself partook in sports. I'm looking behind me. I have a stack of baseball caps I collected over the years. So
me
I'm not
too.
Into it, you know. It's
a
nostalgic. I look back at it when my youth and enjoyed baseball. But as I grew up, I just simply didn't have enough time to follow it. You know, you have a family, you have a job, and then you realize there's other things going on. And at best, it's background noise to me now. And that's, you know.
I loved it until I started to realize that this was part of the, you know, system of evil.
That's what it is. That's like that. You have that realization, and you realize you're dealing with something that's purely malevolent. And that's what's.
Yeah, and you don't understand. And when I did, then I was able to.
Yeah.
So, I would no longer take me out to the ball game.
Yes. Buy me some highly inflated peanuts and Cracker Jacks for $12. Okay, well, I'll let you go.
Yeah, it's great talking to you, brother. I'll talk to you next week. Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.